Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen. In today's episode, we'll be sitting down with Brian Moore, manager of the Willamette Falls Legacy Project, which is working to return one of the state's most important national treasures to the public eye.
Later, we'll welcome the return of our history segment, Canby Then, as we hear about a spate of fire-based pranks that broke out between Canby and Malala high school kids back in the 50s. As they say, boys will be boys. Or, you know, arsonists. Whatever. But first, the news. Remember the Canby Dog Park? It's a project that's been openly discussed and hoped for by Canby residents since at least 2012, when the Friends of the Canby Dog Park Facebook page was founded. How about a splash pad? It's been the most requested item by users of the Canby Park system for years. Much smaller neighboring communities like Hubbard have one, but not us. There's no doubt that these items will be among the many discussed in the new master plan that is being laid out for Canby's Parks and Recreation, which has not undergone a major revision since it was completed in 2002. But this revisioning process will take months, and at the last city council meeting, Mayor Brian Hodson said he is giving staff and the Parks Advisory Board the go-ahead to begin the planning and other preliminaries on these surefire items.
Rick and I met with the chair for the advisory board last week and just was like, you know, there are things that we have on the books, have had on the books. We know that they're going to pop up again, but splash pad, that's been a theme. Buried nodding his head affirmatively that's been a big ask for a long time. So others, what aspects of that can we start looking at? And that's where, to me, it's like, well, let's start having the dialogue and get the recommendation of potential locations.
Yeah. Mayor Hodson said he is working on some detailed direction to present to the Parks Advisory Board at their meeting on Tuesday. In addition to long-awaited projects like the dog park and splash pad, Hodson wants the board to look forward to what Canby may need or want for the next 30 years. Of course, this doesn't mean that construction will start tomorrow, but it's nice to see progress and a continued commitment to projects that some residents had virtually given up hope of ever seeing. We hope to have some more news on these fronts to report to you soon, so stay tuned to the Canby Now podcast.
A 44-year-old man was airlifted to a hospital after crashing his brand-new 2018 Tesla into a tree on South Dryland Road. Police say the driver, Eric John Lochel, was speeding, and his blood alcohol level was more than twice the legal limit. It started at 3:20 p.m. on Friday, November 9th, when a Clackamas County deputy was flagged down by a man on Dryland Road, yelling that there had been a crash in the pond. The deputy drove another 50 yards and saw a black car against a tree in the middle of a duck pond, partially submerged in about 4 feet of water. There was debris everywhere, including golf clubs and an empty golf bag, which was floating nearby. Based on the skid marks and other evidence at the scene, authorities determined that the car entered a slide, traveled into the oncoming lane, and left the road, knocking over trees and going airborne for approximately 20 feet before crashing into the pond. The deputy found that Lochel was injured and slumped on one side, but breathing. Canby Fire Rescue personnel used hydraulic tools to cut away the driver's side door and extract him. He was then airlifted to an area hospital for treatment of significant injuries, including multiple fractures. Police say that Lochel's blood alcohol content, BAC, at the time of the crash was 0.174%. The legal limit is 0.08%. Police say the case was referred to Clackamas County DA's office for consideration of criminal charges. Two robbery suspects were arrested last week after allegedly fleeing the scene of a crime straight into the headquarters of the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office. On Tuesday, November 13th, Clackamas County Sheriff's Office deputies responded to a reported strong-arm robbery at the JCPenney at Clackamas Town Center. The incident began shortly before when the JCPenney employees confronted two people they observed attempting to steal shoes from the store. They had seen the man, Mateo George Emerson, 22, grab a pair of Nike gym shoes from the display and stuff them in his backpack, while the woman, Arceli Medina Parker, 19, reportedly selected a pair of Adidas and put them on her feet, leaving the old shoes behind. During the confrontation, Mateo Emerson reportedly pulled a pair of scissors from his pockets and began waving it at the employees, yelling, "Get back!" Emerson and Medina Parker then fled the mall. Responding deputies quickly spotted the suspects running down the street. Conveniently, they were fleeing on Sunnybrook Boulevard, right in front of the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office. A search produced additional stolen loot, including a JCPenney brand watch and necklace pendant set. Emerson and Medina Parker are booked at the Clackamas County Jail. Both were charged with second-degree theft, while Emerson faces an additional count of third-degree robbery. A Molino man died this week in a single vehicle crash on I-84 in Wasquehanna County, east of the Dalles. According to the Oregon State Police, 32-year-old Zach Rivera was westbound in his 2000 Dodge Ram pickup when he struck a guardrail, crossed both lanes, and went down an embankment. Police say Rivera was not wearing a seatbelt and was ejected from the vehicle. He sustained fatal injuries and was pronounced dead at the scene. Rivera left behind a wife, Kayla, and two small children. A GoFundMe campaign has been set up in support of the family here. Zach wrapped his whole world around Kayla and their two children, the page set up by Oregon City resident Nicole Marie says. He was always a selfless man, taking care of everyone around him, genuine to the bone. He had a vintage soul. He was an incredible father, partner, son, brother, nephew, uncle, and friend to many.
We're about to play our interview with Brian Moore, manager of the Willamette Falls Legacy Project. But before we get to that, I recently had the chance to hear a presentation by Michael Crane, a consultant hired by Mount Hood Territory to do an evaluation of Clackamas County's water recreation assets. I wanted to play a short clip from that presentation. I just felt like it would set the stage for my discussion with Brian really well.
The Willamette Falls is really the birthplace of Oregon. And you own ground zero on the culture and the origins of Oregon. You have it. To celebrate Oregon's river, the Willamette is Oregon's river. And the Willamette Falls is Oregon's falls. I mean, it's so important to Native American population. It's so important to the settlement history of Oregon. It's so important to the Industrial Revolution and all these people in between. It's all sitting right here.
Okay, so for my guest today, we're going to be talking about the Willamette Falls, which is it's in Oregon City, but it's just downriver from us here in Canby. It's certainly something that we're interested in and want to learn more about. The guest that we have on the program today is Brian Moore with Metro Regional Government. He's the project manager for the Willamette Falls Legacy Project. Brian, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm really excited to talk to you about this project. Obviously, we do kind of a shorter podcast, shorter show, shorter guest segment. So I know that, obviously there's been a lot of history with this, with the falls and with this project over the years. So it would be impossible to really do a full background. But I wanted to start by asking you just briefly to tell us the full history of the site for the past 1,000 years or so, if you could do that for the Willamette Falls. Just kidding. But I did want to talk a little bit, just kind of set the stage for this project. The Willamette Falls is the largest waterfall in the Pacific Northwest, right? I believe it's the second largest by volume in the country. Is that right?
Yep,
feel free to talk. He's nodding
correct.
His head.
That's correct.
Can you talk a little bit about the history as far as the Native people and the importance of the site to them, even before pioneers and whatnot came to the area?
There's, the site of the Willamette Falls is an interesting site because it's sort of at this boundary. It's a physical boundary for the river. Mm-hmm. It separates the upper and the lower Willamette. And that dynamic has created a kind of energy around the place ever since it's been in existence.
Yeah.
And it's started with, the fish making their way up, pooling at the base of the falls And
the salmon, you know, crossing yep. there for their breeding and everything that they do, the annual migration that they do.
Exactly. The mm-hmm. salmon and the lamprey mm-hmm. Migrating up the river. And it creates this point of collection. Mm-hmm. And people that have lived in this part of the world saw that and immediately started to capitalize on the bounty that it provided. And so around this location grew up villages and centers of trade and all of that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I know one thing that I read in regard to the native tribes is that it was obviously a special place for them spiritually with how beautiful it was and the power that they sensed there. But that just in terms of kind of what you're talking about in the fish, it was a place that they knew as they were nomadic and kind of traveling throughout the year. It's a place that they knew they could always go back to find food. It was that reliable, you know, that reliable thing that they could find every year, which is really cool.
And villages sprung up around the falls as well. So it wasn't just folks that were nomadic coming back to this location, but, you know, people put down roots, you know, fairly early, and there's plenty of archaeological evidence to that effect.
Yeah, awesome. And then, you know, obviously Oregon City was founded there. I think the first power plant was like kind of in the 1840s, 1850s. It's been mm-hmm. used for power for quite some time. Do you know some of that history?
I don't know the exact dates, but I do know that, you know, when the European settlers started moving into the area, they saw not just the bounty of the fish, but, you know, the elevation change between the upper and lower Willamette, and saw the potential for generating power mechanical power with things like fish wheels and water wheels that powered any number of the mills that were on the West Lynn and Oregon City sides of the river, but also to power the turbines that powered PGE's first power plant. Mm-hmm. It's really the birthplace of PGE. It's the source for the first long-distance transmission of AC electricity in the country, in the world. PGE likes to say in the universe.
Yeah. as far as we know.
as far as we know. And that power was generated at the falls and transmitted up to Portland to power the streetlights in the early 1900s.
Yeah, yeah. So cool. So, you know, for natives, for the early settlers, it was so important to their culture, to our culture, to our survival and thriving. And even throughout the years, just in terms of that power, there were obviously some large paper mills that have been based there over the years, most recently the Blue Heron Mill. So, and we're getting to this, that these businesses kind of came in and basically took over and used the falls, but still having the falls having an impact on the whole state through the power and the things that they produce. But in terms of the public actually being able to see this beautiful thing, experience it, it's kind of been closed off.
Yeah, that's a really interesting feature of the more recent history of the site is that, you know, since industrial development, the land has been privatized on either side of the river right up to the falls. And all that industrial development has captured the value and benefited many people in the region, but it's also limited the public's ability to go and see the falls and to experience the falls.
Right. And particularly, sadly, the past few years since the Blue Heron Mill closed and the different partners that are now part of the Willamette Falls Legacy Project have been working to figure that out. But that's what's so sad. I mean, it's one thing if it's privatized and it's being used and it's making an impact, but for, you know, to be closed off to the public for no private purpose is real unfortunate. So I believe that's probably part of the inspiration for what we're now seeing as far as the Willamette Falls Legacy Project. We need to change this.
Certainly, and that's one of the interesting things about the evolution of the site to me is that, you know, industries come and go over time, and when the Blue Heron Paper Mill Company went out of business in 2011, the city and Metro and others in the community were smart enough to know that there wasn't something ready to step up and take its place right away.
A huge site. We're talking, I mean, people, Canby people drive by it, we see it, but this is not something that any business can just be like, oh yeah, that fits my needs. So yeah, it's very specific, very large.
Exactly. Yeah. And this, you know, this site in particular is challenging, not just because it's a large site and because it's next to a river, and but it's been developed sort of iteratively, like layer by layer, over the last 150 plus years now.
Right.
And so, you know, a lot of times, particularly on this side of the river, the work that they were doing didn't have a template. And so they would just come up with a strategy or a way to do something that the folks working on the mill came up with, and they figured out a way to make it work, they made it work.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily in a clear sequential manner that you would see a lot of industry functioning in today, in modern industrial processes.
Yeah, yeah. So the Willamette Falls Legacy Project is a partnership between your agency, Metro, the state of Oregon, Oregon City, and Clackamas County, with the overall goal of reclaiming the site, opening it to the public, making it activated for businesses to be able to, you know, tenants to be able to use, but obviously having public access to it as well.
Well, the purpose of the partnership between Oregon City, Clackamas County, Metro, and the state is to help catalyze redevelopment, successful redevelopment of the former Blue Heron paper mill.
Okay.
So when it went bankrupt in 2011, the partnership got formed and established a set of core values for the site.
Okay.
And those four core values are public access, a healthy habitat, cultural and historic interpretation, and economic redevelopment.
Okay.
And we've really held fast to all four of those values, knowing that as we advance the project, different values will take priority at different times along the process of development, but really holding fast to all four of them.
Yeah.
One of the main purposes of the project that we're working on right now, which is the Riverwalk,
which is one of the, it's the first phase. So there's multiple phases at this point, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So the Riverwalk is the first project to move forward at the Blue Heron paper mill site, and the reason for it is the Riverwalk gives the public an opportunity to access and view the falls, to gain the value that the community's really lost over the last 100 years on the site.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And it also creates a really great opportunity for us to step in and help address certain issues that make the site a complicated challenge for the private sector to tackle.
Yeah.
Because if the private sector could tackle this on their own, they would have done it, and it would be done.
Right.
But
right.
we saw many you know, very well funded and you know, folks with a lot of expertise in development look at the site and walk away from it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's cool that you know, that the partnership didn't give up, you know, and is still doing this. There's some really cool concepts that have been designed for what I think the overall project, but especially I've seen concepts for the Riverwalk, and it looks really amazing. That website that you guys can see those on is
WillametteFallsLegacy.org.
Okay, I didn't remember if project was in there. But yeah, that's really cool. So right now you guys are in an RFP process seeking seeking proposals to basically bring the Riverwalk to life, look for partners to make that happen. Is that right?
Yeah, so the stage that we're in on the project now is we've come up with a conceptual design. So we kind of have an idea of what the Riverwalk will look like.
Right.
What we need to do now is to prepare engineered drawings that allow a contractor, essentially, to review the drawings and figure out, you know, what things they need to demolish.
They can't
what
just
things,
work off the pretty pictures?
And what things they need to build. Exactly.
Okay.
I think they could, but you know, it probably wouldn't turn out well.
It wouldn't last as long, probably. Yeah.
So we've got a lot of permitting that we need to get done.
Sure.
So we've already started that process.
Yeah.
And so we'll go through the permitting and then get construction drawings, and we're looking to be under construction in spring of 2020.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah, I think this is so cool. you know, I remember when I was a kid, I lived on the East Coast. And one time my parents took us to see Niagara Falls. You know, I think I was probably about 9 or 10. And I never forgot that. You know, that's such a powerful and special memory. And, you know, it was like real touristy, like built up. Hopefully that won't happen here. I don't think it will. When I think about my kids, you know, I hope that they're able to someday have an experience like that here at our Niagara Falls, here at Willamette Falls. I think that would be really cool. So, okay, well, we're about out of time. The deadline for the RFP is coming up, right?
Yeah, the deadline for the RFP is November 20th, tomorrow, and so we're looking forward to that.
Cool. All right, great. Well, Brian, good luck with the RFP. Hope you guys find somebody good in that, and we'll definitely stay tuned and be keeping you guys updated about that. Hopefully, we'll have a chance to talk again soon.
Great. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for being on. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned.
Hi, Ray Keene here from the Canby Center. Don't let the Grinch sneak up on you this holiday season. If you think someone is thinking about suicide, assume you are the only one who will reach out. Listen to them. Ask directly, are you thinking about suicide? Stay with them. Help them connect to support such as a doctor, therapist, or emergency room. Call the National Suicide Prevention Hotline at 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255. Start a conversation. It could save a life. Brought to you by the Canby Suicide Prevention Task Force.
Welcome back to our history series, Canby Then, as we continue to look at some of the most devastating and colorful moments from the history of the Canby Fire District, which have helped shape our town over the past 100 years. In 1913, the Stefani Lumber Mill burned, an uninsured loss estimated at $10,000, more than $250,000 in today's funds. Fortunately, the fire occurred when the mill was closed and no one was hurt in the blaze. By the time it was discovered, it was already too late, but employees nevertheless organized a bucket brigade and succeeded in salvaging a large quantity of lumber piled near the mill. Since the mill had been closed and empty hours before the fire broke out, arson was suspected, but no evidence can be found implicating anyone, according to the newspapers at the time. Before the ruins were cold, Ardia Stefani, the proprietor, had made plans for the immediate reconstruction of the mill, a force of carpenters being now on the ground. He said he would have an entirely new mill in operation in less than 3 weeks. To be fair, he did have the lumber. Around Halloween 1957, Canby High School teacher and wrestling coach Jack Hollister heard some strange noises coming from his front porch. But it wasn't tricks or treaters. It was a burlap bag, soaked in oil and burning quite merrily. Fortunately, the bag was empty, and Hollister was able to extinguish the blaze himself without assistance from the fire district. The incident was an escalation in a continuing series of pranks and troublemaking between Canby and Mooloolah youths, which had been raging in the uprun to the annual football game between the two rival schools. Sadly, newspapers record that Canby was the first instigator of the feud, as the first incident reported was the burning of a giant C on the lawn of Mooloolah High School. Someone also had painted the word Canby on the sidewalk. The Mooloolahians retired by burning an M in front of Canby High, then taking a, quote, noise-making tour around the city, most of it under the watchful eyes of on-duty police officers. One of the cars was pulled over after reports came in that the boys were shooting guns. However, a search of the vehicle by Officer Wayne Watson revealed no firearms, only 5 lengths of rubber hose into which a 410 gauge shotgun shell had been forced. Yeah, I don't really understand it either. The final injustice was the painting of the word Mooloolah across the entrances of high schools in Oregon City and West Lynn. After questioning dozens of high school boys from the Canby and Mooloolah area, local police developed 2 theories as to the perpetrators in this dastardly deed. One was that the Mooloolah High School boys had done it, a reporter later wrote. The other was that Canby youths were the painters, inspired by a desire to give a black eye to their neighborly rivals. Police apparently became suspicious when they caught the perpetrators, and they all said, "Oh yeah, we're from Malala," which is so dumb. In May 1965, the Canby Herald lamented the loss of one of the remaining country stores in the Canby area, as the 91 store burned to the ground. The structure, located on Monitor Road, south of Barlow and east of Hubbard, had been a landmark in the 91 community for over 30 years. The fire destroyed not only the livelihood of owner Henry Cobert and his family, but also their home. They had bought the store the previous August and were living above it. Longtime residents recalled the building was built by a man named Hampton, the newspaper reported, enlarged and improved by the Grahams, and later operated by the Alonzo Foltz family and Harold Haley's. Nicknamed the Old Castle, the Canby Grade School building was built in 1911. In 1974, its top two floors caught fire. Superintendent Paul Ackerman attempted to put out the fire with an extinguisher, but realized he needed backup. He called the Canby Fire District, who in turn asked for help from the Oregon City District, Clackamas County, and Malala. They fought the blaze for hours, but were unable to save the historic structure. On February 18, 1974, Canby Herald photo from the incident carries the memorable and poignant caption, "The Old Castle in Agony." In 1979, one of the largest chicken barns in the Northwest, 500 feet long by 60 feet wide, was destroyed in a blaze that broke out at the Willamette Poultry Company on South Molino Road. The fire caused over $225,000 in damage and killed some 45,000 week-old chicks. The manager, Ed Hines, said he noticed the fire when an alarm went off shortly before 5 p.m., and he saw smoke coming out of one of the doors. He and his son called the fire department, but by the time they arrived, the structure was fully involved. The fire was blamed on an electrical surge that blew a conduit at the center of the massive barn, though what caused the surge was a mystery. Firefighters from Canby, Malala, and Beaver Creek fought to control the blaze and protect the barn until after 10. They did a wonderful job, that department. They're highly recommended, Hines said, giving each firefighter his thanks and a free bucket of fried chicken. Extra crispy. We have many more colorful and thrilling stories to share with you from the history of Canby Fire District, but it will have to wait until next time on Canby Then.
So I'm not crazy about that last history story, Tyler.
You're not crazy about it?
Yeah, the last story. When I said I wanted us to do more stories about hot chicks, that's not what I meant.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Wow. I was really excited about that
joke. So excited. You know what's really sad is as I was reading that story, I kind of thought the same joke in my head.
Of, no, like, you didn't. I'm the only one that thought of that joke.
Like, I almost put in there like a little editorial, like, man, not the hot chicks I was hoping for.
Hey-o.
But yeah. I feel like considering a large amount of chickens actually burned to death,
like thousands of them, yeah,
it's not a good joke to make.
Well, I was hoping there was enough separation to make that joke, but then you just brought it back.
Yeah, I did.
To the sad.
Yeah,
so.
I did.
So this is a Canby Now soapbox. This is a segment where we are a little more laid back, a little more podcasty, a little more talking about our opinions, and you know, in case anyone cares.
You don't hear me going, and then they walk down the road and I'm reading a script for
reading
Frankie.
A script. Yep, this is unscripted.
I can say
X-rated.
Anything.
X-rated. Yep. X-rated. Canby Now. Unscripted.
So, Frankie, why are we doing a soapbox? There's no more elections.
There's no election stuff. Yeah, well, we can still have opinions about stuff.
That's true. We can. Now that I voted, I'm allowed to complain.
You're
about
allowed
it.
To complain about everything. That's right. You're in the club.
The mayor said so.
Yeah. So, how you been?
I mean, should I get into it already?
Let's do that. Yeah.
I got hit by a deer.
You got hit by a deer.
I did not hit the deer. The deer hit me. I was driving out on Brimmer Road off of Central Point. It was like
foggy.
5 o'clock in the morning. Very foggy. Yeah. All the terrible weather conditions. It was all that.
Yeah.
And
good deer weather.
I just took the corner, started accelerating, it scared the deer.
Well, there's that dip.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and uh-huh. then you're going up. Yeah.
And then it scared the deer, and it jumped out, and I tried to swerve. And if I didn't swerve, its horns probably would have gone through my window and
antlers.
Hit me. Whatever.
Antlers.
It's unicorn horn things. So I swerved and it
antenna,
hit the front.
It's antenna.
It's antenna.
It's prongs.
So it hit me and then it rolled and it
wow,
was
we're just
a really
all
sad
into,
sight.
Like dead animals a yeah. segment. Holy cow!
Welcome to the new Can We Now segment. Dead animals. No. It was
but
really
you're okay.
sad. Very sad. I'm okay. The car is not okay. Yeah. I am very. This
much beloved Chevy Cavalier that's been, you've like nursed it through so many things.
I've done so
it was,
much work.
It was
it.
An accident that was not your fault that
right.
was, that basically helped us start this podcast because you got some money from somebody hitting you.
Yes, it actually did. That's really funny because yeah, someone hit me and then I got $1,500 off of the
insurance. Legacy lives on from, yeah. From that good car.
Whatever higher power is out there was definitely, it's got a vendetta against this car. So if anybody wants a slightly used Chevy Corsa or Chevy Cavalier with
got a red racing stripe
with a little bit of deer hair still in the headlight, I got a hookup for you.
It runs.
So that's been my week.
Yeah. Well, I have not hit any deer.
That's good.
Yeah. You know, we just wanted to say with the show, we've both been kind of going through a busy season this past
oh, yeah.
couple weeks. So
my phone's been going off like crazy. Like
yeah.
That.
Well, just, you know,
put
people are even getting a hold of us right now. But we haven't had history until now, you know, haven't had a chance to really do a soapbox. It's been a few weeks for this.
Yeah.
So. With the holidays being a little slower for me at work, I think we'll be back into a more regular.
I hope so.
Yeah, more regular shows.
I mean,
and a little
hopefully
more.
Hopefully, our listeners didn't really notice too much.
Yeah,
of
I think
crazy.
It'll be a more.
It's more between us.
Right. We notice probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you'll be able to expect a little more regular type format from
yeah.
us, and hopefully you enjoy that. So, which leads us to feedback. So I wanted to. Be better about sharing feedback that we get from listeners. And when I say be better, I mean actually do it. I love when people say, like, be better at something yeah. that they've never done. So, yeah, I have a few reviews to read from people or just comments that I've gotten.
Okay.
This comes from an Edward.
So this is why you wanted to do this, to tell me how terrible we are.
No, this is, it's all, I'm probably only going to read good feedback.
Okay.
Which
okay.
is mostly what we get anyway, I do have to say. So it's from Edward Warnock. He says, I have to say, you and your team do a great job on these. This was on Facebook, by the way.
Mm.
I feel as though this is something can be really needed. Please keep it up.
Isn't nice.
Cool?
All right. Yeah. We're a team.
Yeah. Thank
all
you.
All two of us.
Right. It's me and my team. Really appreciate that, Edward. That was great.
Yeah, seeing thank
that
you,
on
Edward.
Facebook. Yeah. And we feel like this is something can be needed as well. That's kind of why we're doing it. So.
Yeah. And we absolutely do.
Yeah. So we got this review from Coho Serve, which I do know you
one.
Saw that.
Yeah.
It looks like a fake Facebook account. It has like no friends.
Yeah.
No, it's an actual thing. They're a company that's involved in restaurants, and they're involved in the Filbert's restaurant that's opening in Aurora.
Oh, really?
So that's how they you know about us. And they posted a nice review, but I realize it does look kind of sketchy.
It looks super sketchy.
Yeah,
like,
it
I went
just,
on.
It's just an account that we made and pulled a random
yeah.
name.
Yeah. Sal.
We made a name by just like smashing the keyboard. So anyway, Coho Serve, they say it's a fantastic local source of news and information in our community. Well produced by locals who care about
nice.
The communities they live in. Highly recommend. Thank you, Coho Serve, the team over there. So.
Good old that whole team. If anyone wants to take our whole team out to lunch,
yeah,
you know, all of us,
yeah, the whole team,
will be
we'll
happy
need
to
a
go
big
out.
Table, you know, maybe reserve a room.
It's
for
cool.
us.
It is cool to hear people like specifically like the production because
yeah.
that's what I do down
that's,
here in the basement by myself when
yeah.
I'm all alone in the dark.
Yeah,
so that's appreciated.
Yeah, and then the last bit of our little feedback segment is that if you go to our page on iTunes, we now have a rating, because it doesn't show until you have at least 5.
Oh, yeah?
So now it shows, and it's all 5 stars so far.
Yeah,
so
that's it is. Awesome. 5 stars for a news radio. That's a big deal.
It's pretty good so far.
Because we're not unbiased.
Yes. So here's the thing. We talk about as part of our outro as far as asking people to write reviews and stuff.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say, like, the reason that we ask for that, it's not just because we like to people to tell us how great we are. We do like it. We do like to see that. It's awesome to get positive feedback. It really, you know, motivates and inspires us. But it really does help us out.
Like, the
ratings are what search engines use to, like, rank us if people are looking for podcasts in the area. So it's a really easy way that you guys can help us feel good, but also really, you know.
It takes 1 minute.
It takes 1 minute, and it really helps our show. And
For the price of 1/4 cup of Starbucks coffee, you can help us.
It's actually just free.
Yeah. I know, but that's how everybody, I heard that today. That's how everybody relates everything to, like, how cheap it is.
Down to Starbucks. And all,
someone said, I can't believe I'm...
And they're always wrong. Said, it's like, Starbucks does not cost $3.
Right. Someone today said, for the price of like 8 or 10 Starbucks, and I'm like, who calculates this?
For only $1,000.
But then I started thinking about how, like, if I get 1 Starbucks a day, is that my allowance of, like, what I'm allowed to give to charity and to other people? Like, oh, I only have 30 Starbucks to give to people.
I'll give you a Starbucks,
right.
And you
Sorry, I gave 29 Starbucks away this month. I need one for myself.
I deserve a Starbucks. I gave away 29 Starbucks. Cool. And then I just wanted to talk about curtains. I saw curtains.
Yeah, you did.
Last weekend, because it's last weekend at the high school.
And I didn't get to go see it.
You didn't get to see it. It was really good.
I'm legitimately sad, I will say this.
Yeah.
Because listening to the group that did the Halloween episode.
Mm-hmm. They were all in it. Yeah.
Yeah. And they were so good. And I really wanted to go up and shake all their hands and say hello and just tell them how good they were. But there's this social anxiety part of me, the reason why I'm a producer who lives in a basement.
Right.
That, like, I'm like, no, they don't want to hear that from me. They're too busy getting their accolades from everybody else.
About what everyone else is there to talk to them about.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So I will say that the show itself, I sort of liked. It wasn't like the greatest show I've ever seen. It was. Yeah. It's a musical murder comedy mystery, which is like too many things.
I feel like you're trying to platypy that one.
So that's not like anything on the local. That's just a script and the people who wrote it. You know, just not my favorite thing ever that I've ever seen. But the kids and the local people, the sets and everything, it was amazing. I was so impressed by the kids. They're so talented. Cool. So they're singing and acting. They really, you know, they just really were funny and just really took the script and made it their own.
Yeah.
The worst part was I did go with my children.
Ooh.
And they always, even from everything, from church to movies, like, I'm able to coach them back from the movies, but they always want to sit on the front row.
Sure.
Of everything.
Yeah.
So, they're
small.
Like,
they get that small. They're small. That short, you know, like, us tall people have to look. We have to look up, and it hurts our necks.
Yeah, yeah.
They're short, so they get that perfect angle.
So, but they're, like, right there. Like,
live performance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they start to get antsy, and my 2-year-old, he, like, it's dark, right? Mm-hmm. He, like, slides out of his seat. I don't notice. And then I glance over, and he's, like, about to walk up the steps to the stage.
No.
This is, like, 5 minutes in. So the rest of the performance, I'm just, like, on edge. Like, sit here. They keep, like, squeaking their seats, and I know everyone can hear it. And then at the end, and I guess I can spoil a little bit because the show's not going anymore, but so the detective, like, finds a murderer, you know, and there's this big confrontation.
Great, thanks for giving away the ending.
The murderer, he gets the gal, you know, the detective's gal, like, by the throat, like, with a knife against her throat, and it's like this epic moment.
Yeah.
And he tells the detective, like, kick your gun over, you know?
Yeah.
So he takes out his gun and, like, lays it on the floor and scoots it across, and my 4-year-old daughter goes, oh no!
You know how into stuff she gets?
Yeah, she's into
like,
it.
Yeah, she's like so into, and she's not joking or trying to be funny. Right. She's like really freaked
she's
out.
She's terrified.
She's afraid the detective's about to get shot.
Right.
So, and like, fortunately, like, people are laughing. Hopefully, no one was too angry. But yeah, like this tense moment. Everyone else is silent. Yeah. My daughter's just like, and then she like buries her face into the seat. Like, yeah. Can't watch what happens
oh,
next.
Oh, man, but, that's funny.
Yeah. So, but good, good show. Great job by the Canby Thespians and director
we might,
Craig Holbrook.
We might have seen a small foreshadowing into your children becoming thespians as well.
Well, yeah, Gideon was ready to
He's
just jump
ready
up
to
there.
Go on
he
stage,
was our, yeah.
And
yeah,
one is very dramatic.
To join the thing. She is. Yeah, for sure. Cool. Okay. Well, that's it for the Soapbox. Thanks
yeah,
for listening.
Thanks for hanging out, guys. And that's our show. Thanks to our special guest today, Brian Moore. Hey, if you like what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss out on our latest episodes.
You definitely won't want to miss our next show. It's Thanksgiving in Canby, and we'll be talking turkey, literally, with Lydia Hart, founder of the Canby Town Turkeys Facebook page. We'll ask her if she thinks a Facebook page based on a small flock of wild turkeys could gain a following anywhere else but Canby.
If you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions for how we can improve, please contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Canby Now, or on our website at canbynowpod.com.
Thanks for listening.